This podcast series has been made possible through an exclusive sponsorship from SA's number one nano influencer platform, The Salt. Most brands have a communication line to their existing customers, but not a way to get them to have additional positive brand conversations. The Salt solves the problem by identifying brand fans and getting them to talk more about their positive brand experiences. The Salt have a database of over 140,000 registered brand fans and in-depth information on each to perfectly match your brand to the right influencers. Reach out to them now and see what they can do for you.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Shark supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey, Gordon, how's it going?
It's going well, Doc, thank you, and happy International Star Wars Day to you today. You're not wearing your Star Wars t-shirt, which worries me, but there's no commitment.
Is that what it is? You know, Gordon, you always, have a trick question every time I come here. You know, you need to give me a little bit of a heads up.
Yeah, exactly. May the fourth be with you. Where have you been?
Good, man. Yeah. All right. Otherwise, all cool?
All good. Looking forward to a bizarre set of circumstances today, in the sense that we've got in the studio Jeremy Maggs, veteran news anchor, recently resigned from ENCA, and after 30 years of interviewing people, we get to introduce Mags on media himself. He's looking strangely confused by the fact that he's not actually controlling this.
Well, not yet.
Well, not yet.
We haven't,
okay,
we haven't started the chat yet.
Jeremy, welcome to the studio.
I'm very anxious because normally I have the locus of control.
Exactly.
And now I don't.
Yeah.
So all I can say is, bring it on. Let's see where we go. Good, to,
right.
Good to see both of you. Love the podcast. Yeah. Doug, haven't seen you for a while. Gordon and I spent a little bit more time together. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to talking to you. Thank
great.
You.
Thanks
well, I
much,
mean, yeah. it's great. And what we will also be talking about today, of course, is your new book, My Final Answer. We'll get to that in a short while. But Jeremy, I mean, surprisingly, let's start at the beginning. You know, 30 years in media, some of that, you know, as a, you know, kind of literally writing for newspapers all the way through to the glory days of your top dog show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But let's start with the news component of that, because that's where we've seen an awful lot of you in the last few years. What's changed about news? And we'll talk about television news and radio news and other things shortly. But just from a news perspective, what's been the big quantum shift over the years? Or is news still the same as it always has been?
No, it's not. It's a very relevant question to start with. When I started out, and I'm not going to go to the newspaper side or the magazine side, but when I started out in radio and then more recently in television, there was more time to fact check, to contextualize, and to think about what you're doing. And I always tell people about the 24-hour news cycle, which has now been condensed into what I call the 2.4-second news cycle. Very simple to explain. 24-hour news cycle in days gone past is there'd be a radio bulletin in the morning, there'd be a morning newspaper, a bit of an update in the afternoon. Television news would give the pictures. The weeklies, whether it be the newspapers or the magazines, would give you the context. And we had more time to reflect. These days, particularly in television and radio news, you're moving in hyper-real time. Often, you will see a television or listen to a radio news anchor talking to someone. They've also got a big tweet deck open in front of them, and they are engaging visually with what people are saying, and that is informing the conversation or the interview in real time. I'm not saying it's necessarily impacted positively or negatively, but it's the speed at which things are happening that I think have taken off incrementally in the past couple of years.
You've got a tweet pad in front of you too there, Doc. I can see that.
I've got an old school pen and a piece of paper, but it works just as well. You know, sometimes, I mean, Gordon, you know, I've spoken about it. Sometimes, you know, that you get, you know, technology in the way of common sense sometimes, and it's not always good. Jeremy, just talking a little bit about that, and I think, you know, we've all seen that, and I guess the probably a few years ago, it was just the producer in your ear that was distracting. Now, as you say, there's a whole lot of moving parts. One of the things that Gordon and I have chatted about at length is about education and quality of people in the fraternity. Today we're talking journalism and reporting and anchors and that. With all these moving parts, have you seen a declining quality of journalism over time, or are people better equipped now with all the new tech to be giving us a better story, a more accurate story?
I'm going to sound like an economist, Doug, and say yes and no. I have seen a decline. I've seen a decline in, I keep coming back to that word, context. I think we have a lot of young people who have come into the profession who are not necessarily well-read or steeped in the past. But having said that, make no mistake that the advent of social media and the speed at which it moves is also a good thing for journalism. Mm-hmm. It keeps the story alive. We get to the story a whole lot quicker. I'm glad you mentioned education, because it is critical in, you know, the brand communication space where you guys operate and that I report on. And also, I don't think that the universities and the universities of technology, the old technicons, are necessarily turning out the right people. I notice a lot of young people coming into this business, and they lack curiosity. And I think that's the one thing that we need in this business of communication. Just before I came to your studio, I was giving a talk to a large advertising agency, and I made the same point to them, that I think that strategic people, creative people, need to be more curious. I'm finding a marked lack of curiosity. And the other point, I don't know if you can teach curiosity, maybe that's another podcast for you, but the other issue that I don't think that we're well read enough. I was brought up by a mother, and I make the point in the book, who not quite dragged my brother and I to the Rosebank Library as it was then, but it was expected that we would go twice a week. I don't see enough reading, and it's reading curiously about things. One of the people that you would both know, Gordon, certainly you in your long career in the advertising industry, the late Robin Putter.
Yep.
I remember sitting at an airport with him abroad, and he was reading a book on Roman history. I looked at this and I said, what on earth are you doing? And he said, you never know.
Yeah.
Might spark an idea.
Yeah.
I need to know as much as possible. Yeah. We in this business of communication need to be more sponge-like. I think he had a point.
And yeah, you know, and just to add to that thought, we need to have deep vertical kind of plunging into a topic. You know, reading a book on Roman history is a good thing. You know, reading three tweets from somebody who lived in Rome, you know, once upon a time, is not necessarily a good thing.
So, and our life, Gordon, is defined by those three tweets, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get beyond that.
Yeah. And it's this continuous, I think it's called continuous partial attention, CPA syndrome, which is, I think, typical of the industry. We're generalists. We always have to be generalists. But you need to have some deep vertical kind of capability as well as being a generalist.
But I don't want this conversation to sound like three old men, or in your case, two old men and one very young man, looking and saying, well, things were better before social media and Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, because it wasn't. Yeah. The access to information is that much better, but I also think that it is layered, as you say. I like that idea of the vertical drop. But
you know, go
for it, Gordon.
The point there as well, I mean, were things better? They were boring in media. I mean, prior to the digital thing, media had become desperately predictable. I mean, you're a great advocate of the long lunch. I know that. And as a journalist, you have some wonderful anecdotes in your book. You know, why did we have long lunches? Because we'd actually finish work by 1 o'clock. I mean, that's how predictable the bloody thing was. I welcome
That's your explanation, and you're sticking
to it. And I'm sticking to it. That's quite great. Because I think my wife might be listening to this podcast. Yeah.
Quite right. But I think the other side, Jeremy, is it's not. I don't think it's worse, and I don't think we're having – I'm certainly not thinking like it. I'm thinking about using things in the correct way, in the correct context, you know, and just laziness. Gordon, you and I have spoken about that before. Sometimes it's easy for me to be fed things in little bites, and I skim through them, and I form a picture in my head, and I don't double-check. You know what I mean? Now, I'm just a consumer of stuff. The problem is I go to dinner and I talk to my friends, and then I become an expert on something that I've gathered from three people that are, you know, and the danger there is when news people start doing that sort of thing. And I'm not saying it does happen. Let's just look at the rise of the selfie by the very notion, your point of being curious. Some people are more curious of themselves, of the selfie. You know what I mean? So I'm more interested in the correct light and the angle and all of those things. And Gordon, you and I pre the show was talking about a halo light, you know, in terms of getting the best. But I'm not curious about you. I'm not interested in you. You know, and for us, you know, doing this podcast, as we do with everyone, we sit and we read and we take an interest in our guest, because, you know, we are interested in the right people. And I think absolutely an attribute, now whether that can be taught or whether it's intrinsic or whether you need your mom to drag you, is to say you need to actually be interested in somebody else besides yourself.
And interested beyond your scope of expertise.
Absolutely.
So I'm not saying go and read about Roman history.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But you've got to go beyond the original, beyond what you're comfortable with. There is an ad agency in Johannesburg. I don't know if they still do it, but once a month or once every 2 months, the creative department members thereof are told to get out of the office and go and do something different, whether it's to go and see a movie or go to an art gallery or whatever the case is. And they've come back, and hopefully back to the sponge, it's affected that part of the brain which you have to engage in terms of lateral and creative thought. I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's a fine line between stereotyping and projection. For me, one of the challenges in media is always to be able to project yourself into the zeitgeist of the consumer that you're talking to. I have to become Bertha Benoni at some point in my life, and I've got to visualize it. Otherwise, you plan for yourself with a little bit of modification. You really do have to immerse yourself.
Can I tell you a story to that effect, which always interests me? It's about consumer engagement. And I remember interviewing one of the brand managers, Cadbury, Mondelez, I don't know what they're called now, whatever they've become. And this brand manager used to go and stand in the chocolate aisle at ShopRite Checkers. Mm. And I went with him once because I didn't believe him. Mm. And he would just stand and watch how consumers bought chocolate. Habit buying, I will go for this particular one, and then the experimenters. He would go to the experimenters afterwards, and, you know, this creepy guy would come up and, you know, talk, and, you know, what are you doing? Why are you buying this? Yeah. But it was interesting. There was that level of consumer, touching the consumer. I'm not entirely sure whether, and you guys are the experts here, your audience are the experts, whether the marketers are doing that enough. I would say there needs to be a lot more engagement at that basement level.
Absolutely right. And I mean, you talk, certainly from my experience, Gordon, and it's dangerous to speak for the whole, but I mean, I've seen a lot of marketers controlling very big brands with big budgets who don't want to go into the trade, because it's just not for us. You know what I mean? It's far more comfortable in our office in Sandton. We don't really want to. And now we're talking formal trade. So we're talking ShopRite Checkers in Sandton City as an example. By the time you say to that person, you've got to go and understand the prepaid market in Tembisa. By that stage, I mean, you've lost your audience. And that's the crazy part of it. When you look at the consumption of a lot of goods and services in terms of the formal and informal sector, and you need to actually understand, that's the marketer, never mind the creative person. Precisely. You know, you made the point that it's great going to the art gallery to get inspiration from a creative point of view, but understand you're making commercial art. I've got to still sell something. So maybe you need to go into that trade, into that dusty, that proverbial dusty street, you know, that cliche, but to actually see your consumer and how they buy your product.
Absolutely. I mean, I've used this technique in media training workshops, particularly with sales teams, where I will get the sales guys to, I will give them a target market definition, each one different, and I will give them a diary, like the radio diaries that we keep an average quarter hours, and ask them to live out that target market in the course of a diary and then collate that information at the back end of it and compare.
How do they live in it?
If you are a 16 to 24 year old student, then go out and normally consume, because so much of what we do in media is instinctively, I know this, therefore it must be okay for other people as well. And I say this with all due respect, one of the reasons 702 did so well over the years was because the advertising industry listened to the radio station. So when you pitched it to a client, you were confident in explaining the content, less confident in explaining the content, you know, 10 years ago to a Kaya FM, because you didn't listen to it. So if a client asked you a probing question, you couldn't deal with it. So living outside yourself is absolutely crucial. Yeah.
Hashtag no filter. That's how this podcast is delivering real down-to-earth stories told by real people. For an influencer campaign that takes brand conversation to everyday real life situations, go check out thesalt.co.za. They are the undisputed experts in real influencer marketing.
Let's just change tack a little bit now. I mean, some of your great moments in the limelight were Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And hence the title of your book, My First Answer. What are some of your memories of that show? I'm sure you must have some good ones. Yeah, and some
so I do.
Ones.
So, Gordon Doug, I was very lucky to get the program. So the story is, to tell it to you very quickly, I had been hosting a breakfast show on SABC 2. It was called AM Today. I think it was ahead of its time because it was broadcast live from three different centers, and you would break away for regional news, and you'd come back, and the executive producer of the program at the time was absolutely insistent that every single morning, whether it be Durban, Cape Town, or Johannesburg, there was a live shot of the sun rising. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was the epitome of what breakfast television should be. Mm-hmm. It was produced by an outside company. The SABC, in its wisdom, chose to take the show in-house. I was unemployed. I got a call from the mega Uber producer Anant Singh, who to this day is a close friend of mine. He's the guy that produced Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom, the movie. Mm-hmm. Phoned me up and he said, I'd met him in my newspaper days when I lived in Durban. He phoned me up and he said, listen, I think you might be interested. Got the show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It's a quiz show. I said, Anant, stop right there. I am not interested. Mm. I'm a journalist. I have higher minded principles than game shows. Thank you very much indeed, but no thanks. He said, listen, I'm going to send you the tape. Remember those VCR tapes that we used to have? Sent it to me, and my wife and I promptly went away on holiday. Came back, saw this tape waiting for me. I thought, look, better look at it. Yeah. Put it into the VCR machine. And, you know, the crackling and all of that. And it was a tape of the British version of the show hosted by a guy called Chris Tarrant, who was a legend on Capital FM in London at the time. I watched this for 20 seconds, and I knew that in telling Anant Singh where to get off, I had made the biggest mistake of my life. Mm. Phoned him up instantly, and I groveled. And then, Gordon, I groveled a little bit more. And once I'd finished the second round of groveling, I went in for a third round. I groveled and I said, listen, I have made the biggest mistake of my life. I want to do this more than anything in the world. Yeah. And it happened. Yeah. So that's how the show started. Yeah. I write in the book that the secret to the show, I think, were two things. One is, I think the time at which it was broadcast was brilliant. So it was on air on Mnet at 6 p.m. in the evening.
Yeah, and that was that time. That was the open window, yeah.
It was the open window, but it was also the time when people were winding down from the Sunday. So they were gathered around the TV set. The second thing was this concept called shoutability. Is that people were able to shout at the television set because they knew the answer and the other people didn't. Sure. And I think maybe the third component is, and that there was a formula, a Bible, as they say in the TV industry, of how to toy with the contestants like a cat would play with a mouse. And that famous line, you know, they would give the answer, they'd be locked in, it was their final answer, and then it was a staged rehearsal. Pause, turn to a single camera, I'll give you the answer, pause, right after the break. Into a commercial break. Sure. I think the people who bought commercials at that time would have been absolutely delighted. Yeah. And it was highly produced. It was a glossy program. Mm. And I think it was the first quiz program back on South African screens for a long time. Mm. Previously, there used to be a program hosted by a guy called John Pank called Specialist, which was called Specialist. It was based on a British version. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came along. Sadly, it ran about curiosity and reading. One final thought on this. I remember the guy who won a fair substantial amount of money in Britain, £64,000. He was a lorry driver. Now, not being disparaging against lorry drivers, but in an interview at the time, they said, well, one of the British papers said, you're a lorry driver. How come you've done so well? And he said, what do? I read the newspapers.
Yeah.
Back to my point about curiosity and reading, I shall say no more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's coming back to groveling. I'm in the media. I personally like to think I give Gollum a run for his money when it came to groveling for something which I considered to be my precious.
Yeah.
So, and as for principles, again, in media, this is a well-established practice. These are my principles, Doc. If you don't like them, I've got other ones. So, I mean, I'm completely...
I've lived by that mantra, Gordon, and I'm proud to say that I still do.
And I mean, I can't believe I was, you know, reading that 20 years ago that show was on. I mean,
you were doing
the time, but that's the point, Gordon. I didn't know that until I read the timeline, prepping for, and you were talking, at the time, I think you referenced, you categorized the Hunsigate and the show, I think, was the same time. That's right,
That's right, right around about
20 years, I mean, even the Hunsigate was 20 years ago.
I would have got that wrong in a quiz,
it was... is that your final answer? it was 20 years ago, and it ran just over 100 episodes, and it was time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a great believer in the Seinfeld factor, always leave people when they want more.
Sure.
There was surprise in the industry. Mm. I also think the dollar-rand exchange rate at the time had something to do with it, because it was a license that was brought to come abroad.
All right.
It was time, but I still think somewhere... somebody should be looking at another quiz show.
Yeah.
I don't know what the format is, but I think that people enjoy the concept.
That makes sense to me. I mean, if we look, you know, at a lot of people last year, we're doing online quizzes. I know I wasn't part of a sort of a quiz set up with some of my friends, a WhatsApp quiz group, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it applies a bit of integrity in terms of whether you got the answer right if you can't see the person. But yeah, there was a surprise how many people reverted back to quizzes last year, and pub quizzes for young folks were rolling along at a hell of a rate in 2019, so obviously hit the wall a bit in 2020. But talking about highlights and shows, I mean, Mags on Media is another iconic show that people will obviously associate with you. At one point, if I'm not mistaken, it was the longest running media show in the world.
I was told it was the longest running media television show in the world. Mm. We eventually closed it out after about 500 odd episodes. Mm. Again, I think it probably in the incarnation that it was running in, it probably overstayed its welcome a little bit. I was getting to the point where I was... And I need to choose my words carefully here, because I don't want to upset too many people, because I'm not arrogant, although this may sound arrogant, but I was starting to interview people, and I kind of knew what they were going to say, and that to me was taking a little bit of the edge out of the program. Mm. Part of it was our own laziness, is that we weren't working hard enough to find new guests. And I think that it is it kind of run its time. It exists online. I'm looking at different ways in the digital space of breathing some new life into it.
That certainly makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm excited about that. But it was fun at the time. Plus, there was a lot of travel to the south of France.
The old Cannes carrots.
I know when you guys have gone in the past, you've actually done some work. Not so much me. I wandered about a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you judge kidding. There, I Gordon. Judge I mean, I've just what. Attended a few, but I mean, you always start with great gusto. I mean, I always go on and have a plan, and you look at all the talks, and in the latter years, they had the app, and you do, but yeah, you know, one or two rosés down on the promenade, and it's all goes, absolutely. It literally goes south.
No, I think we all. I mean, we really did work hard. I loved it. I mean, I love case studies, generally speaking, as a rule, where you can get into the meat of a piece of communication. But we did. We judged pretty much flat out all day. And then the moment the judging was over, there was a universal commitment to trying to find Trevor Ormerod, because he had the drinking budget, I think, for Cinemark in those days.
Go straight to the gutter bar.
And we didn't have cell phones.
That was the gross national product of a small country.
Yeah, no cell phones. So there was a desperate attempt to track down Trevor at Cannes, because he was a great host. Yeah. Just coming back to those predictable interviews, who were some of the – or what was the most interesting person? And who was the dullest person – excluding myself, obviously, that you interviewed?
Gordon, in the pantheon of great interviews, you're probably in the top five. So let me just say this, because you're doing, and I say this because I say that you're doing this because you've invited me into your program. I never answer that question, because it's no one sticks out and everybody sticks out. So people that I have remembered, I remember sitting down and interviewing the Archbishop of Canterbury in Alex Township, not too far from where we're recording this morning. And I remember, so we're sitting in a church in Alex talking about the West Wing while the choir is warming up. That sits with me.
Yeah.
The other interview, which I didn't get to do, but I have been mocked all my life about, all my recent life, was, again, back to Cannes. I was in the media room, went onto the deck, looking at the Côte d'Azur and really enjoying myself. Guy comes up, stands next to me, and he is an impossibly good-looking young man. Beautiful teeth, tan, beautiful haircut.
Trevor Ormerod again.
And we start talking, and he says, well, what business are you? And it's in the book. I think you maybe have read it. I said, well, I'm in the television business. And you? He said, yeah, no, I'm in the television business as well. Exchanged a few more pleasantries and he disappeared. Yeah. Walk back into the media room. A couple of people come up to me and they say, how well do you know him? I said, who are you talking about? Ryan Seacrest.
Oof, okay.
Had no idea who the guy was.
Yeah.
Do you know who Ryan Seacrest is?
No, I don't know.
I was almost caught
myself
short.
I think he's the big names of reality TV.
I remember my producer, who now works on a television station in Turkey, saying that you are an absolute idiot. But she didn't say it in those words.
Talking about possibly good-looking people, I mean, I want to deal with two of the more sordid incidents in your book, which are quite disturbing. One of them in 1972 coincided with Burt Reynolds posing for a centerfold nude.
I just want to say what
Cosmo.
A pleasure it's been to do.
Nice weather, nice day.
I wish you guys well going ahead. So, I mean, thank you so much.
You had a sortie. I mean, you've run a quiz show, a news anchor of many years standing, but your little sortie into nude modeling in 1972. Yes. How do you feel
it
that
wasn't 1972, first of all. It was a bit later. I think it was Clive Rice that posed nude in 1972. I was working, and you're a Durban guy.
Yep, I am.
You're a Durban
indeed.
Guy? No. So you know the Sunday Tribune?
Yep.
Great newspaper in its time. It was the feisty competitor of the Sunday Times. And I had a very, very talented news editor. And he saw a small ad, remember when we used to go to the classifieds? Mm. Best news stories ever coming from the classifieds. And he picked up a piece saying that the Durban Technicon was looking for models for their fine art class. And he said to me, Mags, go and pose nude for an art class. I was up for it at that point, you know, young reporter trying to make my way. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, exactly.
So I duly did this, and it was quite agonizing, to be honest with you, because you move a muscle and people just look at you. Two things emerged from that story. One is that my wife, we weren't married at that point. We were engaged, and Anne was living in the Eastern Cape at the time. And I warned her that this photo was coming out. And I think she drove around every single shop in the city to buy up the copy so no one else would see them. And then, and the picture's in the book. A lot of people have asked me, because I'm now posing for the newspaper picture after posing nude for the art class. A lot of people have come up to me and they've said, listen, why was there such a small notebook? I will leave the rest to your fettered imaginations.
Well, I think it's a pretty bold effort for a guy. And one of his other claims to fame, Doc, believe it or not, is that he was on the inside of a Chappie's bubblegum wrapper for his claim that Jeremy Maggs can eat his own weight in curry.
At Bukhara. I don't even know if Bukhara still exists. I'm not sure.
But
I'm a curry fan.
Yes, yeah.
Again, back to the Tribune days. Durban, Gordon, you'll know the best curries don't come from the established restaurants, but the holes in the wall places. And there were lots of them in Durban and in Pietermaritzburg. Best curry ever, sitting around a formica table, just digging in. Yeah. And I have been a lover of curry all my life. And I was asked in an interview once, and I said I could eat my body weight at Bukhara because the curry was great there.
Yeah.
And then Chappie's got hold of it. And I've been a bubblegum wrapper.
Right. Yeah.
Very proud of that.
I mean, very
few people on the inside of a bubblegum wrapper.
Absolutely. I think that's outstanding. Jeremy, your book became available. It was the 1st of May.
It's out.
Where can our listeners get hold of it?
It's at Exclusive Books and all other fine bookstores. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say that after 2 days, it has raced to number 20 on the
excellent. Well done. Which is probably 2 points ahead of our podcast. I mean, we were lurking.
We've been out a lot longer than 4 days.
Yes, 2 years later. I mean, that's not fair. We have been number one on the Apple podcast list once or twice. But that's fantastic. I'm going to have one last question, and Doc, I'm going to hand it over to you to wrap. I mean, and this is an important one because it's also something which I think it needs to be addressed in a public forum. There's a fairly dark rumor that at one point you actually slept with Richard Branson. And that's in your book.
Gordon, again, my attorney...
Perhaps I've simplified the
My
equation.
Attorney is on speed dial, so I'm just going to... I have, but let me clarify. Yeah. First of all, very nice guy. Really enjoyed interviewing him. One of the things about being in the media, junkets and freebies. And again, some you accept, some you don't. You try to be as... You give the value back that has been given to you. There was an anniversary flight, Virgin Atlantic, from ORT to London. We were going to do the interview with Branson. We were going to fly with him to London for lunch and then take the flight back that same day to come back to Johannesburg. In retrospect, it was the craziest thing I've ever done in my life. But that night, I went with a production crew. Sadly, I was offered a pod in first class or upper class. They didn't. I said, guys, listen, I need to talk to my new best friend, Sir Richard. And he had the pod next to me.
Okay.
So I have slept next to Richard Branson.
So at least you did learn from your blups with Ryan. What's
Ryan Seacrest.
Seacrest, not Ryan Seafood. Okay.
Ryan Seafood.
Doc, he's the guy that made all these reality shows, Gordon. I mean, every second
American
show
Idol,
on American TV these days. And
it is my claim to fame.
And iHeartRadio, all the rest of it, yeah?
I have not watched more than an aggregated total of 5 minutes of reality TV. It is, if you were to stick me in the room, what was the room in 1984 where bad things happened?
Big Brother.
Sorry, but he put you away, and that was the ultimate torture. Yeah. You were confronted by your deepest, darkest fears. That would stick me in that room and show me reality TV shows. That would be the bloody end of me.
But Doc, it's another podcast maybe that you guys need to do. Yeah. I'm assuming there's media value in reality shows.
Oh, big time.
You know, you got to, but it's a question of understanding the audience and making sure that the format is relevant and applicable. But, you know, sure. We don't want to talk about that.
We touched on Virginia Hollis. Remember a few weeks back?
Jenny was helping us out in that.
Product placement, Jeremy. It's proper stuff, you know, not overt. Yeah, you know, we were talking about even James Bond, how badly some of those movies are made, where the lady was saying to him, oh, that's probably a Rolex. And he says, no, it's an Amiga. Now, for me, as a marketer, I mean, you don't have, you can show the Amiga at a glance and you either recognize or you don't. It's the Aston Martin or whatever the case may be, the Heineken bottle. Mm. You don't have to say, I'm having a Heineken. You know it's a Heineken. I mean, it's just, and that's part of that reality TV. You know, through the years, people have put product placement in, sometimes better than others. But yeah, you know, it's a good place to have it. You know, because people do stuff with various products.
Well, Doc, to coin a phrase, that was your final answer. I'm afraid. So, Jeremy, thanks for joining us. That's really been great. I'm getting into the book, and I'm looking forward to quizzing you on some of the more sort of details that I uncover beyond your nudist.
Gentlemen, love your podcast, love the work that you're doing, and thank you so much for inviting me.
And thanks to all the listeners.
Strength to your microphone.
Yep, indeed. Thank you all. Ciao.
Thanks, guys. Thanks very much. Cheers now. And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
This podcast series has been made possible by The Salt, the influencer company that turns influence into affluence. In the same way that information is presented in this podcast in a relatable and authentic way, The Salt gets your customers to tell their real brand stories to their community. Go to thesalt.co.za to learn more about how The Salt can help you grow your business.